Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
John Cass and Jeff Carlin, the Chicago Way Radio Free Podcast in Chicago behind the Iron Curtain. Jeff, it was great to see everybody at the Printers Row Lit Fest. I thought that your choice of the blue pastel lace rompin, whatever it's called.
Rompin, yes.
Rompin was just, I thought, perfect. Did you like my sort of off-white ivory look?
It did. And you know, it worked because it was such a warm day.
Why did people think we were going to wear those?
I don't know. Although the internet and Facebook specifically were a Twitter trying to push us towards and help us track down our lace rump him.
Yeah, Tom Bevan from Real Clear. I'll pay all the money in the world for that to see Cass in that, but I'd have to wax.
Yeah, he took time from running his media empire.
I did. So there were two lies, and I don't like lying to readers or listeners, but yeah, okay. So I did not wear the rompins, neither did Jeff at the Lit Fest, although it was great to see everybody. Sorry we disappointed you there. And the second thing is I saw that movie with the bad Greek accents.
The Un-American Wonder Woman?
The super thighs. It was like watching Fox News, but with Spears. Was it?
Yeah.
It was great. It was a great movie. And, you know, she's not Arya Stark.
Yeah.
Let's just admit it. Mm-hmm. But it's a great film. So go see it. And please don't whip me with your whip of truth and all that other SM stuff that they kind of hid in the movie. Kind of held it down a little bit. What's going on this week? We're going to have Chris Kennedy in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. That'd be very interesting. Looking forward to see his plans for Illinois.
I ran into him, you know, just a few minutes ago. He's getting ready to do this thing. I ran into him. Actually, he ran into me, almost killed me outside the Tribune Tower on a bike. I walk out to get some fresh air, and I'm laughing about the fact that I'd seen a picture of a colleague of mine when he was, you know, 30 years ago with a beard, and it was kind of funny. My editor, Bruce Dalt, and it was just like back when we were kids and going to concerts and everything. And I walk out, and there's Chris Kennedy. Almost slams me with the bike. Not really, but he comes right up close to me. He's like, "Hey, John." I'm like, "Who are you?" And then I realize there's a guy with spandex pants on and biker stuff. Sweating. It's Chris Kennedy. So right now he's meeting with Bill Daley in the at Pete's Coffee, I guess, preparing for this. And Bill says, "This was just, you know, it was just inadvertent. I just ran into him. It's not a conspiracy, Cass." So we'll see. We'll see about that. So we'll have Chris Kennedy and Kristen McQuarrie is going to join us for that. And are you good? Everything good with you in the Carlton world?
The Carlton, yeah, the Jeff Carlton world. Thank you for that. Yeah, everything's good. A busy week. It was a busy week last week in D.C. Very interesting. Everyone glued to their TVs.
What'd you
for
make
the Comey
of that? Because people are going to be talking about the Comey thing for days.
Yeah, you know, I found it interesting. I was more interested in the Loretta Lynch piece of it. I think that was the thing that the takeaway that kind of got overlooked. I mean, I know everybody kind of touched on it. Which was that she asked Comey to downplay the investigation to Hillary Clinton's email server.
And not call it an investigation,
right.
But call
it
a
matter.
So he did.
Right.
Wait, he did. So, but he can't handle Trump saying, can you please
tell people out,
he couldn't handle Trump telling people, saying, you've said three times that I was not under investigation, can you let the people of America know that? I don't know. I don't think Comey came off so well.
No, I don't think he did.
I don't think Trump did either.
No, I mean, Trump certainly did not. And I don't think his prepared statement by the lawyer didn't come off well either. I mean, it played well to his base for sure. They gave them the...
What, that he was vindicated?
Well, it didn't seem... If I were he, I would just left it. I would have let it just step away from it and forget it. Or do it the next day, or do it on Twitter like he did. But
there was no obstruction.
Yeah, no.
You couldn't have. So now the Democrats move from some genius, I don't know, some guy who thinks he knows everything. I hate those, you know, columnists with a big mouth, and they always talk and they think they know everything. But this one guy, some Greek, said the Democrats moved from, you know, Trump is Putin's Bobo to now the new thing was, when they saw that going away, was Trump as obstructor.
Right.
And now that's going away.
Yeah.
So where are they going to be now? Or was all this, particularly the decision by, I guess, the entire establishment not to leak that Trump was not under investigation, because they all knew about it, apparently.
Right.
No one leaked that. Is this whole exercise been about short-circuiting his legislative agenda so that the Republican establishment and the Democratic establishment don't have to deal with it?
Yeah, I'd put good money on that. Although I want to know, and that's the thing that, you know, is unfortunate. I mean, Trump is an outsider politically, no question. And had someone more formidable politician been in his position to become president, would have, leading up to becoming actual president during the whole transition period, they would have had the foresight to say, well, don't go and meet with the ambassador. Don't have these conversations. Don't do this stuff.
Flynn should have known that.
Right. They should have known that. But they didn't, because they weren't, I mean.
It's not a crime to meet with the ambassador.
Oh, absolutely not. No. I'm not saying it's a crime. I'm just saying you're serving up softballs to Democrats who then can turn and do this type of thing and do push either, you know, their agenda for an investigation into some sort of collusion. And
it wasn't.
And right.
Or at least, maybe Manafort, maybe other people with Trump were playing games. I think he's scared about Jared, his son-in-law. I'm just speculating here, but it wasn't Trump. And still, the reason why we had it, a constant screaming in my business, in the media, constant screaming, playing it back and forth over and over, when they knew, according to the testimony by Comey to the questions from Rubio, that he wasn't under investigation. So what does that tell you about the establishment and the media being together against Trump? What does that say? Am I wrong here?
I don't think it's outright collusion between the media and, you know, just
everyone. Oh, really?
No, I don't. Not top to bottom. I don't. I mean, I'm just.
Well, we're in the media. I'm in the media.
Yeah, there are certain people.
Tribune publishes me. So.
Sure. There surely are people who, you know, who get into quiet little rooms and talk with politicians. Hey, can you put this story out here? I'm going to give you the story. Just make sure, you know, if you could leave this out of it, or you could run them with this. I'm sure that happens. But I think more often than not, there's a second guess when a Democrat goes to a reporter in D.C. and says, hey, I have under good authority, or I know I have a source that's telling me that there is an investigation into the president. And run with it. And they don't second guess it. They take it and they go to another Democrat who's in a different committee, and they blindly take this stuff. And
right, that's called carrying water.
Right, and I don't think it's, and I don't know, because I mean, obviously I live in Chicago and I work in Chicago,
but so you know,
but there are plenty of people who in the media who are just oblivious to the real workings of things. And I think that there are low-level reporters who wind up with their name on a byline, and it winds up that they're getting duped, they're getting played by the Democratic Party to carry water for them without even knowing it.
I don't know. I think there are people on both, you know, Republicans can do this too, and people who are of a Republican bent can carry water and or believe in a cause and support a policy. My concern, the larger concern for the Republic, is what we've been talking about on the Chicago Wave for quite some time, that there was clear collusion between the Democratic Party and the media to kill off Bernie Sanders and help Hillary Clinton. That's never been addressed by the institution of journalism, not really, not to the point where it's really been vetted and discussed. The people who engaged in it have been given promotions within the media from some smaller places to the New York Times and the Washington Post.
What happened to Donna Brazile? Do we?
Donna Brazile's not on CNN anymore.
Right.
But a lot of the others are. And all that is bad. But when you add to it allegations of Russian collusion and instability in the White House and all this other stuff, there's no more important time for journalism to have credibility. And when you don't have it, our republic is in trouble. That's what I see. I see a serious problem here long term for us. Because now the American people know, hey, he wasn't under investigation. You guys didn't say it. Nobody said it. He said it, and everyone said Trump was an idiot for saying that because it wasn't true. Well, it turned out, at least up until Comey's testimony, that the Gang of Eight, Democrats and Republicans, do it, and the media did not report it. Why, Jeff?
Yeah, that's it. Either, I don't know. I mean, the stuff within it, I mean, that was probably would have been information that would have only been able, only come from the Gang of Eight or the president himself.
Well, it was all, as Marco Rubio said, everything leaked out.
Right.
Everything leaked, even stuff that wasn't real leaked about Russian hookers and stuff. That leaked, all that stuff
leaked. Yeah, but that stuff was different. I mean, that wasn't, you're talking about information that wasn't privied, wasn't released in a secured setting under the Gang of Eight under a closed session. I mean, that stuff came from outside that. That didn't go through the Gang of Eight and then out to the public. That came from a...
I don't know.
No, we do know. We do know that the person, the operative who was working in Europe...
The British operative.
Right.
His
stuff came out...
I'm not going to say the Gang of Eight and Congress never leaked anything.
No, absolutely not. But,
come on.
But I think that one piece of information, you would have known exactly where that came from, because it would either have been... No, it would have either been that Gang of Eight, or it would have been someone else specifically in that room, and they would have known. So I think you wind up in a situation where that piece of information could have remained top secret within that group. And if it had come out, then we would have known where it came from, because there was only one group that knew it. It was Comey and his people, which we hope they're not leaking stuff, but...
I don't know. I tend to think that the Gang of Eight and other congressmen and senators knew of it. They may have, some may have, for partisan reasons, the Republicans may have said, hey, you know, the president's not under investigation. And nobody, it wasn't really reported.
No one took it off.
And it wasn't reported with the breathless nature of the other stuff.
Right. And that goes back to my point, is that you have people that are, especially more liberal, obviously, we're given a piece of information, and then they run with it because they say, well, the source told me, and this is a good source. But if that same source says, well, the president isn't directly under investigation, they don't do anything with it because it doesn't really help this narrative that we're building and this
right.
And that's where
I think, and I've been saying this in the paper, the relation that the Washington media hive, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, is often apt to play the role of town crier or the role of guardian of the empire against outside forces, because that's human nature. So this is like Rome. They're with the empire. They're supporting it. They live on it. Their spouses work in it. They're part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good time. And then you have this personality, Donald Trump, an unfortunate personality, who's there taking advantage of it, or fighting it. So the whole thing is bad, and I don't see it getting any better for any particular time. I don't see it coming back to whatever the good old days were, because we never had any.
Right.
And I don't see Jeff Carlin or John Cass ever wearing lace rompins. So for everybody who believed that we were going to wear lace rompins, you're totally wrong.
Fake news.
Fake news.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts. And I'm too sexy for Milan. Too sexy for Milan. New York and Japan.
So now we have Chris Kennedy running for governor on the Democratic side. And he's our guest. So, Chris, why are you running for governor?
Well, I have four kids that are all around college age, graduating or headed in, and they're going to make a decision about where to live for the rest of their lives. And I want them to live in the Chicago area. I want them to stay in Illinois. I think that's the same feeling that every parent has for either their own children or maybe their nieces and nephews and the neighborhood kids as well. And we're losing our kids. We have the greatest out-migration of high school kids of any state in the country. And once they leave, they may never return. I don't want to be 80 years old and have to live or move to some place that my kids went to because they couldn't find good jobs and great careers here in Illinois.
So how do you keep them here?
Well, I think we've got an enormous competitive advantage with the universities that we have in Illinois. I think if you look at the really great cities where the kids want to live, they want to move to Silicon Valley. They want to go to places like Austin, Texas. They want to go to Pittsburgh around Carnegie Mellon and Pitt. They want to move to Boston and New York, Research Triangle. All of those places are home to great Tier 1 research universities and a whole infrastructure of other colleges. And those universities drive the economy. They're the birthplace of new ideas. And those new ideas spawn little companies that employ people who pay taxes, that fund local schools, that educate a whole new generation ready to begin that creation again and again.
All that's great, but we have a political system in, and I don't mean to dismiss it, sir. It's important because I have children, and I have twins, and one is telling me he's not going to move live here. Okay, so I want my kids around me, but we have a political system that is not only decrepit but broken, and the leader of it is the boss of Illinois, and he's a fellow Democrat. He's a Democrat that you have to deal with. His name is Mike Madigan, and he basically runs the shebang and controls all sorts of ways to get revenue out of businesses and people. So where are you with that, with Madigan engineering, or at least seeming to engineer, labor endorsements for Mr. Pritzker?
Well, let me say this. I think that the fundamental difference between a Democrat and a Republican is this. I think Democrats at our core believe that government can be good, that it can be an agent of progressive change, that it can educate our children, provide safety to our communities, and invest in the economy that we're all part of. So for Democrats, the most important thing to do is make sure that the public supports government, that the public thinks the government is good. That's a really tough argument to make in Illinois right now. It's hard to convince people that government is free of corruption. It's hard to convince people that politicians aren't in it for their own good. It's hard to convince people that they should pour more money into a system that they think just enriches the insiders. And I think we need to take that money out of the system so that we can re-legitimize government in the minds of the voters.
How much, Chris, do you think, especially given Scott Drury, state rep from North Shore, who just jumped in, very crowded field, what is what is the political calculus for you in order to win a primary with this many contenders?
Well, I'd say this. That's a better question for the pundits, for people who study study those things. I'm going to bring my message directly to the voters. And I have a really high degree of confidence that the typical Democratic primary voter is super well informed. They have an enormous range of sources of information. And I think when I tell them the truth about what's happening with their taxes, the low quality of the schools that we fund in Illinois, and the fact that the system is rigged against them, and the property tax system in particular is maintained because the leadership in our state makes money off of it. And until we take that money out of the system, they're never going to change it. And if they don't change it, we'll never have great schools for our kids. And if we don't have great schools for our kids, we'll have terrible outcomes for our state.
So you've talked a lot about, and the Tribune is helping you tremendously with this series that Jason Grotto has been writing. That's just phenomenal for listeners. It's homework. I mean, you have to sit and comb through a lot of information, but I don't think there's been an analysis of Cook County property taxes in history than what is appearing on our front pages. You have proposed getting the Ed Burks and the Mike Madigans out of the property tax business. How do you, how do you really do that? It's a great sounding idea, but aren't there constitutional issues of telling lawmakers what they can and cannot do in their, you know, for their jobs, basically?
Well, it's our constitution. It's the people's constitution, and elected officials work for us. We don't work for them. Other states, other municipalities, other cities have banned lawmakers from being elected to a body and then having outside interests adverse to the interest of that body. Now, that's fancy language, and the simple form of it, I guess, in Illinois would be to say, if you're an elected official, you shouldn't act as a property tax lawyer. You shouldn't act as a lawyer for people suing the state for slip and falls. You shouldn't act as a lawyer for one unit of government lobbying the other unit of government, which prevents us from limiting the number of units of government. We should ban people from having those outside interests, because then we know when they take a vote, they're free of the conflicts that can cloud people's judgment and their vision for the future.
I mean, you're talking about all kinds of conflicts in Springfield, though. You're talking about lawyers who represent banking clients. There's all kinds of – it's not just the Madigans and the Burks. I mean, it's Republican – on the Republican side, you had Tom Cross, who was a Republican leader for a long time, you know, a lawyer. We don't really know much about what sort of conflicts maybe even exist.
Well,
so
get the money out. Stop
them.
What
does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Simply – I mean, there can be no service without sacrifice, and these elected officials are going to have to make a sacrifice. They're going to have to give out that outside income. But if they're not willing to do that, they shouldn't be there to serve. We need servant leaders, not leaders of servants. We don't work for them; they work for us, and they.
What state are you in?
Well.
This is Chicago.
I'm sorry, but the problem here is that you know, we look inward and not outward. We look to Springfield and the Thompson Center for solutions. We need to look to other states and other cities and see what they've done, see what's possible, so that we don't continue to be content with the terrible outcomes that continue to come our way. The idea that you're shocked that we should ask people to give up their outside income when it's adverse to the interests of the legislature, to the government, to the people of Illinois. I mean, that's so bizarre to me that there's even a question that we should ask for that. Everybody should give up their outside interests when those interests aren't consistent with the needs of the state. That's what I think.
If we could, I love this conversation, but I'd like to bring it to the level where I roll, which is personalities and leverage. You've got the most powerful man in Illinois is the Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan. He's the chairman of the Illinois Democratic Party. You're running for the chair for the nomination of that party. One of his top aides is Joe Berrios, the Cook County assessor. And how does all that Berrios being the assessor and the chairman of the party, and Madigan being the property tax king, property tax reduction king, and chairman of the party. How does statewide, how does all that fit into what you're saying about outside interests and corruption, et cetera?
Well, let's say this. I think the system is inherently corruptible. And I think the series that the Tribune is working on now come out demonstrates that there's enormous prejudice in the system. The system's rigged against the poor and is probably a de facto violation of the Civil Rights Act because people of color are so disproportionately punished by the system and disproportionately paying much higher taxes. So I think the Tribune series has proven that the system is corrupt. Now, do I think the individual players are corrupt? Do I think Mike Madigan is corrupt? I think that corruption in the classic sense means you violated a law. Do I think that Mike Madigan is violating the law? No, I don't think he's violating the law. Do I think we should change the laws so that what they're doing today would be a violation of the law? Absolutely. Other states have done that. Other cities have done that. And it should be a violation of the law here.
Because the corruption that I talk about is not some quid pro quo in this sense, but it is the larger sense of corruption where people feel that they're serfs or peasants and they have to go with doffed cap to some lord to get their property taxes reduced when that person is also in some sort of this machine that is perpetuating the system. To me, that is corruption, is it not?
I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes beyond having to have your hat in hand and kowtow to some elected official when they should be kowtowing to you. I think it's a racket. And the notion of racket, that term, it means something. If the assessor came to you and over-assessed your property and demanded a contribution, you know, that would be just a straight shakedown. That would be illegal. But they introduce property tax lawyers as an intermediary. And the property tax lawyer provides you what's called protection against the threat of being over-assessed. Anybody who's owns a property knows that after the assessments come out, you get deluged with 10, 15, 20 letters from property tax appeals lawyers offering to do the work on your home for free. What?
I just got some as my assessment went up 30%.
Yeah, well, those are protection offers. Those are people saying, I'll offer to protect you. You give me a third of the savings. When that occurs, it's harder to find out where the illegal activity is. That's called a racket.
So if you're governor,
it ends.
You would. How would you end it? How would you tell – would you say – Joe Berrios or Mike Madigan, you can no longer – you'd make a law. Mike Madigan, you can no longer be the property tax assessed king. And Joe Berrios, what? What would happen? What is your view of Mr. Berrios? What's your view of him?
My view of Mr. Berrios is he's overseeing a system that disproportionately punishes the poor and people of color, allows a racket to exist in Cook County – ignores sales price as an indicator of value, allows the major properties in downtown not to pay their fair share, forcing everybody else to pay more. He's pushed property taxes to the level where people cannot maintain their homes and home ownership in the city. We're losing thousands of people a year out of our city. We're becoming smaller and whiter, and he's driving that system more than anyone else.
Set the record straight on some of the accounts that have come out that either Merchandise Mart or other properties with which you are associated also went through Madigan's law firm to get a tax break.
So that story's gotten so muddled, it's like unbelievable. But we bought after the Kennedys sold the Merchandise Mart, I then ran the Mart and related properties in Chicago, a whole series of different properties, apartment buildings, parking garages, the Mart, the Apparel Center, and other properties. We bought a property, an office building in downtown Chicago called 33 North Dearborn. About, I don't know, 3 to 5 years before we bought the building, there was a countywide lawsuit against the assessor of Cook County, in which I guess hundreds or thousands of plaintiffs were involved, and that wound its way through the courts, and Cook County lost. But it was a massive lawsuit. We then got a refund, or the building got a refund 5 years later, which happened to coincide when we owned the building. We owned it, I don't know, 3-4 years. And during that period, we got a refund from a lawsuit that occurred years before we ever bought it. We had nothing to do with.
So the refund, it was not an appeal. It was not a property tax appeal. But it was Madigan's law firm.
Madigan's law firm had represented the building. In Chicago, when you buy – yeah, before we bought it. When you buy a building in Chicago, almost never do you change your property tax lawyer.
So when you
– almost never do you change your property tax lawyer.
I got it.
They come with the building. And there's an implicit threat that if you do that, you're going to have a terrible outcome.
So to also to set the record straight, you did not use union or non-union plumbers at 35 Dearborn to pull the toilets out of it. So it would be uninhabitable and then drop the, you know, that convoluted
business. That story, I mean, just to be clear on what happened with J.B. Pritzker, that was not a simple appeal. I don't know, 25, 30% of everybody in Cook County appeals their taxes. About 65% of those appeals win, which means that there's no rule of law. Okay? There's no rule of law. It's just wild guesses. And if you're connected, you get a good outcome. If you're not connected, you get screwed. What happened with J.B. Pritzker on Astor Street is completely different. He had that second mansion reclassified. That wasn't a straight appeal. It was reclassified as uninhabitable. And I don't know that there's a second example in Cook County of a $3 million home being reclassified as uninhabitable, absent a fire.
Is that why you say that Pritzker's unqualified to be governor?
Well, I'd add that to the list of other things. I think anybody who's two principal, you know, political patrons are Larry Dominick and Rod Blagojevich probably gives you a strong indication of who he's in this business to protect, and his willingness to protect that system, to be a part of it, to seek their support, to speak in their language, to talk of corruption, to act as an intermediary, to use the rig system for his own benefit is something I think we need to get away from.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy because of you.
I mean, this campaign season, I'm already exhausted, right?
It
started so early. Yeah, I know, right? Strap it on, Kristen. Put on your big girl pants. We could go on and on. But there was talk that there was actual pressure on you, conversations, maybe bullying tactics to try to get you out of the race. Is that were there?
Did you I mean, get if there phone? Were,
come on,
for
okay.
me.
This is a podcast called The Chicago Way. And we know, Kristen and I and Jeff, we know how this thing works. So just say it. Do they come to you and say, get out and try to squeeze you out? Because it looks like what they've been doing is exactly that.
Well, I'd say this. I'm the smallest of seven brothers. If somebody tried to pressure me in this context, I wasn't aware of it. That's like water off a duck's ass for me. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I'm in a certain position where, you know, I can say these things, I can do these things, and there's really very little bad outcome that's going to occur to me. But that doesn't mean everybody around me isn't susceptible to the threats and the bullying tactics that have come down. And certainly people who work with me, people who are vendors, people who are associated with the campaign, and others have continuously shared with me the threats that they would not be allowed to work and for the party or you know, perhaps in Illinois again if they continue to support my campaign.
It's got to make it hard to raise money, because I remember even, you know, years ago when Alexei Janulius was running for state treasurer and that wasn't and he wasn't Madigan's guy. If you even endorsed him, if your name was on his website, if you donated money to him, I mean, it was like all of these entanglements of just trying to like just mess with him and mess with his whole campaign. And so people had to call him up and say, all right, can you please take my name off your website? And I mean, is
sure.
That typical?
So I think, you know, they're running a little bit of a shock and awe campaign and trying to push me out during the summer or something so that we don't have to go through the vetting process. And this really isn't about me. It's really about who's the best candidate to take on Bruce Rauner and give the state a range of choices in a general election so they know what their outcome will be for the next 4 years. We need a fully vetted candidate in the Democratic Party, and I don't believe that J.B. Pritzker can withstand a full vetting. He's untested. He's unproven. He's unknown. He's unvetted. You Google him for 15 minutes. You hear him trash-talking President Obama. You have him talk about the unions as racist. He has a history of abusing the tax system, insider behavior of the worst sort, in my opinion. And the only way he gets elected is if he does not go through that vetting process, if the others drop out and we're stuck with him as the candidate and the Democrats are forced to rally around him and build him back up. So they would like to get me out. No way that's going to happen. Zero chance. My name will be on the ballot. And I'll have enough money to compete. I mean, the changes in how we go to market and in politics these days is incredible, and Illinois is just woefully behind. And the idea that you need hundreds of millions of dollars to compete is ridiculous. There's the power of things like a podcast, of the individual voice, particularly in a Democratic primary, is so powerful now. And I don't really believe that the notion that money wins. And I hope to prove that.
The in the discussion of the last several days about Kennedy and the media, there have been stories that say he accuses the property tax system as a rigged system. He accuses the elites who are doing it, even though he is himself of the elite. But he refuses to name names. He refuses to say the name Madigan. You've seen these stories. They were in the Tribune. You know, that he refuses to name the use Madigan's name in this context. Is that because if you agree with it? And are you trying to negotiate a way through in the primary where you can use the anti-Madigan animus without – that's already in the politic – without – going to personal war with him? Well, because already he thinks that you're in war with him. You know this.
I don't know what's in the speaker's mind, but I'd say this. I think just 2 minutes ago I went through what I thought about the nature of corruption and the speaker's activity. I don't think what he's doing is breaking the law, but I think the law should be changed so that what is going on should be illegal.
How would you change the law? I cut you off.
Having said that, let me just back away and say this about Berrios and the Tribune story. The same things that are happening in Cook County happen everywhere else. It's not localized just to Cook County. The same thing is happening in Springfield. It's happening in Rockford. It's happening everywhere in our state, where these incredibly unequal outcomes come from the assessment process. And the problem with that is not simply that it's unfair. It's not simply that it's a violation of the Civil Rights Act. It's not simply that it's corrupt. There's a much bigger issue at stake, which is that our kids are being screwed. Our kids are being denied an education. The educational resource, the funding of our schools, It's woefully less than every other state. We have a system that is so dependent on property taxes here that we look unlike any other state. I think no state is more reliant on property taxes than we are. And we don't get rid of that system because people make money off of it. If we got rid of that system, if we paid for our schools like the great states with great outcomes do, with an income tax, a graduated income tax, a progressive income tax, if we paid for our schools, we would have great outcomes for our schools. But you go to Springfield and, you know, 90% of the kids or more in two of those schools are not ready to go to community college or university or trade school without remedial education. Is that what we want? Is that what we want for our next generation? Because if those kids are going to drive this economy, we're in trouble.
What do you think about when I hear Democrats talk, you know, progressive income tax, we need to change the school funding formula. Democrats could have done this in Springfield at any point. This is your party that is one party rule that's running the property tax system, that's running Cook County, that has control in Springfield. There have been bills in the House and the Senate to institute a progressive income tax, to put it on the ballot, to change the Constitution. School funding, finally they passed something this last session. But what are your thoughts about the fact that these are your guys? This is your party.
Are these my guys? Is this my party? I don't know about that, but I don't think I'm.
You are a Democrat.
I don't think I'm their guy, but I think the fundamental issue is that no one in leadership is going to support abandoning the property tax system as our primary system to fund the schools. No one's going to support that in favor of a progressive income tax or any income tax or any other formula, as long as they're making money off of it. That's what's going on. There's all sorts of other machinations, but that's the source of their outside income. That's the source of their wealth.
I mean, are you suggesting that lawmakers should be full-time lawmakers, no outside income like they are at the federal level, or?
I don't think you have to go that far. I don't think that's a bad idea, but I don't think we have to go that far. All we have to do is say, yeah, you can have outside income. You can be a lawyer. You can be an insurance salesperson. You can do whatever you'd like as long as it's not adverse to the interest of the state. That's not a complicated concept. They shouldn't have jobs.
You need a law to do that.
What?
Don't you need a law? Don't you need a statute?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to belabor the point. Right. I think it sounds like a good idea. I just think there are so many areas where you could make that same case. You could make the case with city workers who, you know, work for the city but are also lawmakers who are voting for policies that would impact them with the city. You could say that about insurance.
Walk through that scenario again. I didn't understand what you just said.
If the issue is conflicts of interest and enriching and the possibility that you are enriching yourself off of your government role, I think you will run into a lot of territory down there.
Okay, ban it all. Ban the stuff that's adverse to the interest of the state. Ban it. Well, I mean, they do it in other places. You look shocked to me.
I'm not shocked.
This is not rocket science here. It's not like I'm. The Third Testament is arriving here, and you know I'm bringing some great concept that no one's ever considered before.
No, it's just that
it's been
first
adopted
of
all over the United States.
I think you might be able to do it on a going forward basis, but I don't think you could pass a law that would force these. You know, going forward, you can't be a property tax lawyer and serve in the General Assembly. That's not going to help us with the Burks and the Madigans. And I think that's a constitutional issue. I just don't think you could probably.
If I can't convince the Tribune editorial board that that's a good idea, then I'm going to have a hell of a time. But I'm going to bypass. I'm going to bypass that entity and go right to the people. And I think any voter who hears this, any voter who listened to the last 2 minutes, is going to be like, yeah, he's right. We should do that.
They may agree that
you're right. It's going to be hard to do.
I'm not disagreeing
with you. We have generally taken the position that disclosure is the best. You know, more transparency is the best way. And so maybe you improve the statements of economic interest, which are just paperless, meaningless pieces of crap. You make them disclose more about who their clients are, all of their outside sources of income, and you make disclosure more readily available. I mean, here's the thing. We know which property tax lawyers are funding the Board of Review, that are funding Joe Berrios. We know who they are because they have to report it. We know that they're getting reductions in exchange for those campaign contributions, and we tolerate it as voters. We keep voting them back in. So
you're ready to tolerate it as long as they disclose it. And I'm saying absolutely not. Disclosure's not enough. Ban it. Stop it. End it. Make it stop now.
Okay. I want to see a draft of your bill.
I want to see it too. And you come back and bring it.
Okay.
To us.
I don't know that I'm in a position to introduce a bill at this point.
I think there's some sort of law, right? That
somebody's going to jump on it. Somebody's okay. going to steal it right from under you.
I want a full disclosure to everyone that's listening that Chris Kennedy almost killed me a few minutes ago. I was walking out of the building. I just talked to Bruce Dolt. We were just talking about, like, he showed me some picture of when we were, like, he was a, you know, kid in the business with a beard, and we were laughing. I'm thinking about it. I'm laughing, and I'm walking out the building, and here comes a guy on a bike, almost kills me, on a bike.
On the sidewalk?
Wearing spandex shorts. The future governor of Illinois almost killed Cass. I just want to say, what were you thinking, man?
I was thinking about killing you.
Yeah, it would have done it. I just want to make sure that the Tribune front page people know it's two N's in Kennedy, right?
Oh, did they misspell it?
Let's try not to mess that up.
Did they?
Yeah, our front page headline yesterday misspelled Pritzker.
Really?
Yeah, we missed a letter there.
I used to misspell, I don't misspell that their names, but there's a guy named Frank Cruzzi who used to work for Rich Daley, and he was like the secret City Hall guy.
Yeah.
Secret state's attorney. Mm-hmm. I used to say that he would sell two dead rats on a coat hanger to earmuffs to blind guys. You know, that's what kind of a weasel he was. And I used to misspell his name on purpose.
Oh, nice.
Well, I wish I'd got you on that bike this morning.
You almost did.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy, for being with us. And we'll wait the legislation to ban
tax lawyers from serving
tax
in
lawyers
government.
From, yeah.
Yeah,
and
anybody
Joe Berrios.
Who's
one last question. I know you got to go. One last question. They are pushing for, the Democratic Party is pushing for an early vote on endorsement. Already, the labor people have endorsed Pritzker. What do you make of all that?
I mean, I think there's a huge difference between how people who are union members and just working families, members of labor, vote, and how their leadership votes. I mean, we know that in the last election and the one before that, 45-50% of all labor voted Republican, even though labor leaders endorsed the Democratic ticket. And so the leadership really is in a position to steer or determine how their membership is going to vote. I've been pro-labor all my life. I ran an all-union shop, competed with non-union labor, non-union operations all over the country and beat them because the union labor that ran the merchandise mart was the best in the country. And I believe you get better outcomes for a business, for a city, for a state with unionized labor.
With that history, why didn't you get the endorsement?
Well, I think it's less about a vote in favor of J.B. Pritzker. I mean, you're telling me that labor voted for a guy who's got a blow-up rat in front of his Pico pallet plant. I mean, their endorsement of
his name
Pritzker,
is Scabby.
Their endorsement of Pritzker was as absurd as, you know, the Christian right endorsing Donald Trump. I mean, it's like, really? Really? That's what you think the members of those unions can make sense of that? And I think you start looking at what the insiders want to do, and Joe Berrios controls the Democratic Party in Cook County. If they endorse early and they endorse Pritzker, it's just one more data point clearly indicating that he wants to be the representative of the status quo. He wants to perpetuate the leadership that exists. He doesn't want to bring change to our state, and he wants to replicate the Democrats somehow want to replicate this idea of having a billionaire governor who's going to fund their state reps and state Senate campaigns so that they can threaten their membership to stay in line and not think independently. And I think that's a disaster for our state.
Chris Kennedy, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way. And please don't run over me again. Okay. It's been a great time on the Chicago Way. I almost got run over by Kennedy on a bike, who wants to be governor. Then hung out with Jeff, Carlin, Kristen McQuarrie, and Chris Kennedy, our guest. And I want to thank everybody for spending time with us. This is the Chicago Way.